Hi, folks. Cliff Goldstein here. Welcome back to the show. I want to talk today about a Russian woman, a poetess named Anna Akhmatova. She was born in the city of Odessa in 1889, which is where my family from my father's side hailed from. She died in 1966. Now, Akhmatova lived a pretty tough and miserable existence, mostly because she lived under Stalin, and like so many folks, she suffered from his brutal dictatorship. Though she herself managed to stay out of jail, many of her family members and closest friends didn't. Her son, that only child, was arrested again and again because of his links to her. And though there were some periods when she was more in favor with others, for most of her adult life, she was on the fringes of Soviet society, her poetry not fitting into the communist dream of a socialist utopia. Oppression, marriage and divorce, sickness, poverty, depression. I mean, her story is hardly a happy story. And yet amid all this, she wrote a poem, which of all her work is probably my favorite. It's called Everything is Plundered. And I want to look at that poem with you today. I'm reading a translation by Stanley Kunitz and Max Howard. And as I said, the title is Everything is Plundered. Everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. Notice this opening line. Everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. In other words, everything is ruined, she's saying. Nothing is left untouched. You know, she wrote this in 1921, not long after the communists took over and began controlling or trying to control every aspect of life. And as we know now, the communists pretty much ruined everything they touched. Notice, too, her images. Everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. You get the idea not only of a physical destruction, but of a moral destruction as well. All things were betrayed. They were sold. Nothing was sacred. Nothing was considered off limits. So she starts out, you know, pretty much setting the stage, setting the background for the rest of the poem. So she goes, everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. Death's great black wing scrapes the air. Wow, death's great black wing? I mean, that's a powerful image. And of course, it's obvious she's talking about the reality of death, which with the Russian Revolution was now more prevalent than ever. I mean, the violence and brutality of the Soviet Revolution left untold numbers dead, millions. But even at that time, things were starting to get bad. Little did she know what was going to come once Lenin died and Stalin got in. Death's black wing was only beginning to do its scraping. So she's talking about death, betrayal, plunder. Not a pretty picture, to be sure. So let me read again. Everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. Death's great black wing scrapes the air. Misery gnaws to the bone. Why then do we hope? So look, another image of bleakness, suffering, and pain. Misery even to the bone. I mean, this is a woman despairing. And again, if you knew the story of her life, if you knew the circumstances she was under, you would understand why she despaired. She had a lot of reasons to despair. Now, let me read you the rest of the poem. Let me read you the whole poem. Everything is called Everything is Plundered. Everything is plundered, betrayed, sold. Death's great black wing scrapes the air. Misery gnaws to the bone. Why then do we not despair? By day, from the surrounding woods, cherries blow summer into town. At night, the deep transparent skies glitter with new galaxies. And the miraculous comes so close to the ruined, dirty houses, something not known to anyone at all, but wild in our breast for centuries. Wow. What is she saying here? What is she saying that amid all the carnage, all the suffering, all this horror, she's expressing hope? She says, why then do we not despair? Because she's seeing something deeper, something beyond what appears on the surface of reality. She's looking deeper at the world, deeper at reality, deeper at what even humans are doing. What's going on here? Amid all the pain, amid all the suffering, what is she able to see in the midst of all this? What is she able to see? But she sees cherries blow summer into town. Cherries blowing summer into town. I mean, what a beautiful image, what a beautiful metaphor. In its own subtle way, it carries the idea of something wonderful, of something hopeful amid all the plunder. You see, she's seeing something in nature, something grander and deeper and more lasting than the foibles and lies and sorrows of humanity. I love that. By day from the surrounding woods, cherries blow summer into town. That's by day. So by day, she's looking and she's seeing something to give her hope amid all the despair. And then she says, at night. So now even at night, amid the darkness of night, at night she looks up and she says, at night the day, deep transparent skies glitter with new galaxies. Wow, that is beautiful. Deep transparent skies. See, again, she's looking beyond what this world itself offers. She's looking beyond Stala, beyond the Cheka, beyond politics. By day, from the surrounding woods, cherries blow summer into town. At night, the deep transparent skies glitter with new galaxies. See, she asked the question, why don't we despair? Because of this. Deep transparent skies and new galaxies? Now, that's a fascinating image if you think about it. New galaxies? I mean, you can't look up at the sky and see our own galaxy, or at least much of it at all. We only see a tiny smidgen of our own galaxy. And she talks about the glitter of new galaxies. As I said, we can't see much in our own, much less the glitter of new ones. But again, what she's doing, she's projecting beyond the immediate, the death scraping the air. She's projecting beyond the misery that gnaws to the bone. She's projecting beyond the plunder of everything that she sees. It's as if only what she sees is not the whole thing. There's so much more beyond it. So she sees in the nearby woods the cherries blowing summer in the town. And then she looks up at the deep transparent skies which burn overhead at night, and she sees beyond them. She sees in those skies the glitter of new galaxies. In other words, she looks up there and she sees hope. She sees hope of renewal, hope of a starting again, of something new and better than what the world here offers. And again, I think what's just fascinating is that how amid so much suffering, she can look up and see something that gives her hope. How interesting how people sometimes amid the worst situation, and her situation was bad, she hadn't given up in despair. See, she was believing in something beyond this. And I remember reading a story once, and I might have mentioned it on the show before, about South African writer Lawrence Vonderpost. He was in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. And a storm, and the Japanese had said that night they were going to, the next morning they were going to kill all the prisoners. And, you know, he figured this was his last night of life. And, you know, obviously he was a little disturbed. I mean, they're threatening to kill them all. And then he said that night there was a ferocious thunderstorm. This terrible thunderstorm came with wind and lightning and rain, and it was just blowing and blowing, and the power was so great that he sensed in that storm, he got a sense of peace. He got a sense of peace in the sense that humanity was not in total control, that there was something bigger and beyond it. And in it, he said he saw something good as well. He saw that in that storm, and well, obviously they didn't end up killing everybody because Vonderpost lived to tell the story. Of course, nature is always limited to in what it could say, in contrast to Akhmatova, who looked up at night in the stars and saw these glittering galaxies that gave her hope. The Dutch writer, the Dutch painter, Willem de Kooning, he lived most of his adult life in New York City. And you know, if you've ever been in New York City, you don't see much of a sky, stars in New York City at night. There's too much light. And then cocooning, spent one summer living in North Carolina. And then one night they were out in the woods. He was out in the woods and he was with his wife and they looked up in the sky and he saw all the stars. He saw all that. And he just said, let's get out of here. He said, the universe gives me the creeps. Okay, well, I guess that's one way to look at it. But for Anna Akhmatova, she looked up and she saw something that gave her hope. What else does she write? Listen to this. And the miraculous comes so close to the ruined, dirty houses. Something not known by anyone at all, but wild in our breasts for centuries. Here's the essence of her poem. Here's where it all comes down to. I mean, look at the dichotomy here. And the miraculous comes so close to the ruined, dirty houses. I mean, there's the pathetic human situation, the pathetic situation of her own life, the pathetic situation in our own country. It's all captured in her phrase about the ruined, dirty houses. I mean, what are houses? They're where we live. They're where we are. They're where we eat and sleep. They're where we live out our lives. And they are ruined and dirty because so much of our lives are ruined and dirty. And yet, in the midst of all that, she writes that the miraculous comes so close to the ruined, dirty houses. In other words, I think she's saying that even amid the wreckage of our lives, there's reason to hope. The reason to hope in the miraculous, in the transcendent, in something beyond the immediacy of this world, something beyond this world. And the miraculous comes so close to the dirty, ruined houses. Something not known to anyone at all, but wild in our breasts for centuries. Something not known to anyone at all. Something that we can't figure out with our minds. Something that we can't rationalize. Something that we can't explain scientifically. Something that we can't prove. Something that we can't analyze and parse and explain scientifically. Yet, she said, it's wild in our breast for centuries. In other words, this is something that goes through generations. What a great image. Wild in our breasts for centuries. It's there. It's real. It's wild, even if we can't explain it in numbers or in formulas or with rational thinking. You know, someone once asked a scientist about something about creation, and they said, what do you try to think in your gut? To which he replied glibly, I try not to think with my gut. Well, you know, that's cute, but that's part of the problem. Maybe we need a little more coming from here than just up here. You know, I think of the Frenchman Blaise Pascal in the 1600s. You know, we had this amazing religious experience, and he wrote down his views and scribbled them down in a little notebooks, which were found after his death, and they translated it, and it's called Pensées, Thoughts. And there's a famous line in there, which is kind of what I believe what Akhmatova is touching on in this poem. And Pascal's line, I know it by heart, I've read it so often, the heart has reason which reason does not know. That is, there are just some things that reason cannot explain, cannot understand, cannot fathom. You know, as human beings, we're capable of reason. We have the capacity to reason and to work things out logically. But I'm convinced that as human beings, we are not ruled by reason. We tend to be ruled by our heart, by our emotions, by things which necessarily can't be quantified the way reason is. And I think that's what Akhmatova is doing here in this poem. Reason alone would say, hey, lady, you got nothing to hope for. You got nothing to take comfort in. You have only misery and despair. That's what reason would tell her. And yet the cherries blowing summer into town, and the new galaxies that glitter in the sky, galaxies that she can't see, these talk of something beyond what she can see, beyond what she can reason about. You know, we are heirs of the Enlightenment. We are heirs of a philosophy and a worldview that placed a lot of stock in what human beings, using their reason, using their rationality, using their supposed great potential for goodness, could accomplish. And in one sense, some of these principles have done us very well. Hey, the philosophy of Enlightenment worked great for building computers and airplanes and bridges. On one level, it worked great. On the other level, trying to build society on these principles. Well, we do have a thing called the French Revolution, which tried that, and I don't think anybody really wants to go back to that. We have the Russian Revolution, which, communist revolution, which ended up you know, violence and all that, supposedly based on these principles. Chinese Communist Revolution didn't turn out so great anyway. I mean, something seems to be wrong with a philosophy of life that leads to so much violence. You know, a philosophy based on this idea of society on reason and religion didn't work out. And then we come back to Anna Akhmatova and her poem. Everything is plundered. Sure, everything has been plundered, but despite that, there's still a hope wild in our breasts for centuries. Yeah, it's there, wild in our breasts, but where does it come from? Why should we hope? In nature that blows the cherries into the nature's in the summer that blows cherries into town? In the glitter of new galaxies? You know, what hope is there in a new galaxy? We can't even get out of our own solar system, much less another galaxy. Okay? And besides, if science is right, all those galaxies are doomed to extinction anyway. You know, I don't know what Akhmatova's deepest intent of her poem was, other than that she reached out beyond the immediate misery of her situation. And yet, at the same time, I ask, what is this hope? What is this hope that she's talking about? She's seeing hope in this nature and in the sky, and it causes her not to despair. But is there really something to hope about, or is it a false hope? You know, I heard a story once about one of my favorite writers, or somebody I've read quite a bit. I don't agree with him, obviously, but and it was about the hardcore atheist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre. And Sartre, if you've read much about him or read his stuff, you know, he spent his life denying the existence of God, and then trying to work out the moral implications of that denial. Because Sartre was very logical and reasonable. He realized, and he said it, if there is no God, if there is no creator, then humans are pretty much left on their own to come up with their own morals. There is no real moral, you know, absolute moral system. And I agree with Sartre on that. And I laud his honesty in seeing the logical conclusions of his philosophy, however much I reject his premises. I mean, you could have perfectly flawless logic and wind up totally wrong because your initial arguments are wrong. But anyway, he was an atheist, hardcore atheist. And on his deathbed, the story goes, I mean, I wasn't there. I don't doubt it, though. The story goes that on his deathbed, he was uttering things. He was laying there dying, and he uttered something. I die in hope. Okay, that's fine. You know, he's an old man, he's dying, and he utters, I die in hope. Okay, fine. But then he uttered words that stunned those who heard them. Because as he was dying, he goes, I die in hope. And then he supposedly muttered something, but hope must be based on something. Okay, but hope must be based on something. That's the bottom line. Hope, sure, you die in hope, but based on what? Anna Akhmatova, in this poem, amid all the despair and all the suffering and all the pain and everything she went through, she expressed hope. But the question is, what is that hope based on? Science? Well, what hope does science have in really answering the hard questions of life? Science prolongs our life a bit. Some ways can make it a little more comfortable, but in the end, what good does science do for us about the really hard questions of life? None at all, actually. Hope in nature? I mean, she's referring to nature here. She's referring to nature, and it's from nature that she sees these things, which give her intimations of hope. But, you know, I've expressed myself on this show before that nature, in and of itself, as it appears now, is not really our friend. Nature, in and of itself, is the enemy, because nature is what's ultimately gonna kill us. Our nature is what nature, Mother Nature, is gonna kill every one of us. So the hope in nature, in and of itself, as we now see it, that's nothing to hope in. Nature is something to try to transcend, I would say. On the other hand, and maybe this is what she was getting at, you know, I really don't know. There's something in nature. There's something there in the world, in the glittering galaxies that point beyond it, point beyond them do they not? That it points to something beyond itself. I mean, think. I mean, again, just be logical. Did nature create itself? Do you know anything that creates itself? Does anything create itself? Did this book create itself? Did this table create itself? These cameras I'm staring at, did they create itself? Nothing created itself. And nature didn't create itself. And the beauty of nature, these things, intimation of hope, that's what I think Anna Akhmatova is looking at. At least, I think she has to be. Because she has to know. She has to know that the cherries blowing summer in the town, that's not gonna, in the long run, solve the problems caused by the Bolsheviks, solve the problems caused by her tough marriages, solve the problems caused by her sickness, are they? Those glittering galaxies that she looked up at the sky, you know, at night and saw, how wonderful they might be, how wonderful, they aren't going to answer the questions of why people live in these ruined, dirty houses. They aren't going to ease the pain caused by, as she said, death's great black wing as it scrapes the air. You know, I don't know what Anna Akhmatova really, really meant with the poem. I mean, deep down. I mean, I'm not sure she even did, because she was dealing with something that was wild in the breast for centuries. And I don't know, something wild in the breast for centuries, that doesn't sound like something you're going to nail down with hard, fast rules or hard and fast logic. But in the end, I believe this was essentially, I believe in the end, what you've got here and everything is plundered. I think it's essentially, it's a religious poem. It was, in her own way, I think, a modern version of the words of the psalmist who, centuries and centuries ago, declared, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. And then the psalmist says, there is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. You see, if you get right down to it, folks, it's not nature itself which gives us the hope. As I said, nature itself is out to get us. You know, nature itself, there's a hole out somewhere in the ground with our names written on it and a bunch of little critters in there just licking their chops for us. That's what nature offers us in and of itself. But I think it's behind nature itself. It's what nature alludes to. You know, I know that there are famines and that there are earthquakes and there are diseases and all the rest. And the stars in the sky, however beautiful, in and of themselves, don't offer us anything in and of themselves. I mean, we can't even get to them. But you see, it's what's behind those stars. It's what's behind it all that offers us hope. And you see, if there's going to be any hope, any chance of answers, any chance of salvation, of any hope of something beyond what this world offers, then it's got to be behind those stars, prior to the stars. It's got to be something beyond what the world in and of itself offers. It's not ape nature that offers us the hope, but what's behind it. So you can say whatever you want, and you can argue with me, and that's fine, because I know there are a lot of bad things out there. But if for a moment you could peel away the negatives in nature, if you could just peel away all that, it alludes to something good. I mean, think for a moment of human sexuality, for instance. Think of all the potential happiness and joy that's in there. Not the actual for so many, but the potential that's there. Look at all the wonderful, you know, the fruit and the grain, all so suited. Look at them in themselves. Look at their own creation, what they tell us about the power that created them. Sure, so much has been ruined by what's out of our reach. And that's how come others, you know, and that's because that's a whole, how that came to be that way is a whole other talk. But what I'm saying is, for the moment, look deep into the potential. Look into the beauty of nature. Look into the beauty of creation. And it alludes to something good and wonderful. Not good and wonderful in and of itself, but good and wonderful in what's behind it. Can't you see hints, intimations, even promises of goodness? The beauty of the world, the potential of all the goodness in the world, of the forms and structure, these speak of something wonderful, of something lovely, of something fabulous behind them. I remember one time I was out in a field somewhere, and I saw these beautiful trees and the flowers and the birds, and I remember just stripping it away, putting away all philosophy, all everything else. I just looked at that, and I said, whatever made that had to be good. I can't prove these things mathematically. You can't prove it apodictically. But it wasn't something I needed to prove. I just knew it. It was something that was perhaps wild in my breast for centuries, to quote her. Now, I don't want to stand up here and present some wonderful, lovely picture about human life and how humans live now. I know for many people it's terrible. For many people, you know, their lives are like those that talked about Akhmatova, living in ruined, dirty houses. And that's unfortunate. That's our pathetic lot, and that's the way things are in our world from now. But what I'm saying is kind of what Anna Akhmatova was saying. Only I want to go a little further. She pointed to things in nature as some kind of harbinger of things good, something hopeful. But we fool ourselves if to think that it's nature itself, that it's in those galaxies, that that's the answer any more than it's in the summer blowing, the cherries that blow summer into town. No, the hope, the answer for salvation, the hope must come from the God who created those summers, who created the cherries, who made those glittering galaxies. In and of, folks, in and of yourself, everything is hopeless. Everything is plundered. Death's great black wing scrapes the air. And even if everything isn't plundered and betrayed in your life, death's black wing sooner or later will scrape the air. But the hope, there's hope not in ourselves, but in the one who created those glittering galaxies that she imagined in the sky.